This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Monday, 26th of June, 2023, and we had a bit of a kerfuffle, to say the least, over the weekend in Russia. An apparent mutiny by Wagner leader Prigozhin, taking some of his forces on some sort of march towards Moscow and occupying a couple of cities. And then the thing, almost as quickly as it appears out of the blue, it disappears with supposedly some deal brokered by Belarus's Lukashenko, which gets Prigozhin over there. And boy, there were a lot of quite notable experts on Russia over the weekend. Ola, we saw from so many different angles on this that it was just a sign of Putin's weakness. That's a sign of maybe assessing some kind of internal blame game for why the war effort is not going better. I think our best role here at Saxo Market Call will be to say we're none the wiser. But of course, it puts us on watch for what happens next.
Absolutely, and I think the only thing we can be pleased about so far is that this didn't happen on a trading day, because the news flow we had on Saturday would have just caused absolute mayhem in the market. So luckily it didn't. We opened fairly stable this morning. We are slightly high in some of the commodities that are focusing on Russia. We got oil trading higher, but then we also have to remember it dropped more than 4% last week. So the moves are not really expressing any kind of worries. I would probably keep an eye on something like wheat the most, simply because we've seen the global concerns recently weighing on or lifting that market. And actually talk about, we can come back to some of the other wheat car, the other commodities. But on slide six, just highlighting as well, we actually could see grain market rally pause a bit. We had a very, very strong move this past couple of weeks. And part of that, we know, has been driven by speculators who were caught short in this market. They have now built a small long. So the buying pressure from that front is going to be reduced a bit. So we're back to watching fundamentals, and that's obviously incoming data. We're watching some data coming from the US late today. But obviously, wheat will be in focus. Maybe gold from a safe haven perspective, but then again, we just basically seen a market that has been on pressure recently, so impact so far quite limited.
Yeah, markets under pressure. We see that in the equity market, and the situation over in Europe. We were talking about this, Peter, just before we came to the studio to record. European market, if you look at something like Eurostoxx 50, really in danger of rolling over here. You still, when you see that headline S&P chart there on slide two, the basic S&P chart, there's been such a run-up that this consolidation so far with an extension Friday to the downside, still not threatening. I would argue it almost has to get all the way back down below 4,200, reversing out that last sprint higher technically to be meaningful. But I'm looking over at our equity theme baskets, and some of these reversals, and we're still up month to date for most of them, but you see, okay, bubble stocks off 7%. Even though they're still up month to date 3%, some of these sectors looking a bit weak here. What are your thoughts on what's going on in this market? Still a very narrow advance.
Yeah, so you can see in the table the top three theme baskets there: defense, mega caps, and then we have the MSCI World Index. So having mega caps and MSCI World up there, and then the long tail, all the other theme baskets down, it provides you all the information you need to understand what's happening right now. So you have a small, very powerful cluster inside the equity market that is actually keeping the broader indices up there, so only down a little bit from over the past week. But you have a long tail of the broader definition of the market, because all these theme baskets will represent what is called the median, so the sort of the average company in the global economy, and they for sure are taking a beating here. So I think that's the true signal. There was considerable weakness in the equity market. So you probably don't see that in the S&P 500, but I think increasingly that is an outlier case that should be treated carefully and not be over extrapolated. And then the defense, I'll be writing about that in my equity update today. Still considerable strength across that theme basket. And I don't think that, you know, with all the messages we're getting from NATO countries and the spending spree we're seeing, this is a theme basket that will continue to thrive. And I think, you know, equities, John, will, you know, battle or will deal with two major forces over the coming months. I think the first one is these signs that inflation is not only rolling over, right? We have had this camp on Twitter banging for, oh, inflation is yesterday's story. The inflation is coming down. Look at goods, blah, blah, blah. And it's just the sticky parts. We've talked about it endlessly on this podcast. All the sticky parts on the surfaces, the damage have already been made, and it's far more stickier than we thought. So we're beginning to see repricing in the bond market around that, and that will be the first force for the equity market to chew on. The second one, these very elevated expectations you're seeing among the mega caps and the AI, what it will bring in terms of growth. I think the Q2 earnings releases, which will come up here in the mid-July and then run through the mid-August, will be a massive test on whether this actually causes extra demand. I mean, just because you roll out AI, does that mean that there's extra demand for Adobe software? Or is it just or can you just be quicker with it? So I think is it really a demand driver, or is it just an efficiency tool? And if it's just an efficiency tool, it doesn't necessarily in the short run create a lot of extra demand and more revenue growth, etc. It just free up some time to do something else. And I would argue sometimes we humans are extremely bad at using extra time, because, I mean, what, are we just going to flip through some more videos on TikTok or what? It depends on what we use that extra time on.
Yeah, you ring up Adobe specifically, and I was really surprised at the initial market reaction, marking the stock higher, so much higher after the close, because the results didn't look like anything particularly interesting, and the stock had just ramped. I don't have the percentage on top of my head, 30%, whatever it was. And there was a reassessment. Yeah. So that session, it sold off all session long and actually came down a bit further. So yeah, the whole sort of end use versus what we've called the shovels, the semiconductors and everything, that yes, there is going to be a big scramble to make sure that you can run these AI engines to optimize whatever your AI-linked business is. But is the demand for the product at the other end? That's the big question.
Yeah, and two very quick points, John. I have a lot of to say today.
Oh dear.
So the first one, Nvidia, exactly. Just like when you had the COVID and you had the big splash on stimulus and fiscal, you had that very big rally in terms of demand and revenue growth when we came out on the other side. Nvidia right now is seeing this ketchup effect as well on demand, but we don't really know the true underlying growth rate and demand from AI until we get on the other side of the first wave of excitement. So that's why there is incredible amount of outcome uncertainty, I think, actually, on Nvidia's business. We see this initial growth, but what is the long-term, actually, stable growth? And then the second point I want to hammer in is, I'm sure a lot of our listeners who have seen this chart is being floated everywhere, that you have the forward earnings yield is now on par with what you get in short-term fixed income and investment-grade bonds. I just want to say one point. I don't think I hold the truth there. I understand whether it will cause any specific dynamic. I just want to point out that all these people that are floating this chart were not people that were arguing for the earnings yield to halve during the years when these very short interest rate bonds were close to zero, right? So it's almost like the argument is only going one way, but it's never going the other way around. So I just want to say that don't put too much weight on these. There's always one week, we come in one week, and then there's one chart that is getting all the attention on Twitter. Just, don't put too much weight on a single chart, please.
Okay. And I imagine some of the equity downside, specifically in Europe, as you're getting gathering concerns on the course of the economy, we saw those PMIs that were very weak late last week on Friday. Curiously, somewhat curiously to my mind at least, so we saw, for example, German manufacturing was at 41. Some of the services ones were coming down. The one in France, I believe, was the worst of those. The reaction was pretty quick, swift into euro, so we saw it dropping down to 108.50, but it sort of bobbed back to almost unchanged relative to where it was just before the data releases. So I'm not sure what we're looking for here. We saw ECB marked quite a bit lower, the front end of the curve marked a lot lower in Europe. And just technically in an impossible limbo. We really need to drop below 108.50 to start to get a more bearish outlook on Eurodollar. You can see a chart there on slide 3. And you certainly need to stick a 110 plus to argue that something is afoot on dollar weakness. And the yield curve at the same time, as I expressed in an internal call, I'm waiting for something to happen that gives me some information value. I think it's going to provide the most information value for where we're headed next, and it's just simply refusing to do so. We're stuck, very stuck in the long end range, long end yields, and the front end is just waiting for maybe one more hike from the Fed. Maybe is the recession coming or not? Is the sort of waiting game we seem to be playing? There are other things afoot, though. The yen trying to get a bit firmer here. There was some jawboning from one Bank of Japan profile overnight. Sterling still sticking a lot stronger after last week's BOE. Norwegian krona coming back in a little bit. Clearly, the central bank is not the issue there. It's more the direction of the Eurozone economy and energy prices. And Aussie just having a terrible time of it. Before I get back to you, Ole, I just wanted to note that copper is still toying with that key area that it sort of broke on the way up. And now it's looking at it back on the way down. I think Australia very much linked to the Chinese story, metals prices, and the renminbi as well, as we're seeing a weak renminbi, although it was fixed a bit stronger. And then you've put in this positioning chart from the weekly futures positioning report that the U.S. sends out, so where markets were as of last Tuesday. And I think the most interesting one we can pull out of there is this ongoing massive euro long, but the move in sterling, as you see there on slide four.
Yeah, it looks like speculators were preempting the Bank of England hawkish announcement. So they're right in terms of holding the position, but obviously the aftermath did not really generate the movement in sterling that perhaps they had anticipated. So there is quite an extended long there as of last Tuesday, and some of that has probably reduced ever since then. But it's the 5-year high we reached, so quite unusual we see such a big move in sterling. And you mentioned yen, and as of last Tuesday, that short in the yen had reached at the 13-month high. So there's things going on, but still the market is really focusing their dollar short against euro long primarily.
Yeah, so the ultimate contrarian play from this the takeaway there would be a short sterling in position if we're to believe that these positions are getting stretched. That's not been a very easy one to short lately. It's been quite a ride higher. Okay, limited impact, as you indicated, over into commodities markets from this the situation over the weekend in Russia. So what are you watching for next?
I think we're first of all watching any escalation and the impact it may have on some of the Russia-focused commodities. That's anything from gas and crude oil to wheat and some of the other metals. But dwell too long on it. You can see these are the 1-day performances. It's not really. It's only gas that sticks out. Crude oil, as you can see, we held support again last week on Friday, and we are still stuck in this range, which has been averaging around 75.5 for the past 2 months. So really, the market is still in need of some kind of a spark to get it out of this range that we're stuck in right now.
Just a conspiracy theory as to what I want to say. It looks a bit managed down there, but I'll leave that for the tinfoil hats.
Well, it absolutely is, because every time it comes down, someone cuts production.
That is managed. Yeah. Okay. In the end, it is managed by some of the suppliers for sure. Yeah. All right, Peter, a surprisingly interesting week ahead in earnings, I would say, looking at your overview on slide seven. There might be some things we can pull out of what's going on here from a couple of these names, I guess.
Yeah, we start today with Carnival, which is the world's largest cruise line operator. They report before the markets open in Europe. And I've put in here on slide seven today, slide day, I've put in the annual figures and expectations going forward here. But if you look at the quarterly numbers for the quarter, which will be their second quarter in the 23 fiscal year, it ended in May, they will report almost 100%, a doubling of revenue, basically. And they're bouncing back into positive operating income after seeing some horrible losses during the pandemic years. The industry is definitely stabilizing. I think the key issue here for investors going forward is that, can they manage their debt? So they have $31 billion of net debt on the balance sheet. And you can look at the expectations here for the fiscal year 23, which ends in November. 4.1 billion EBITDA operating income, which will rise to 5.5 in the year after in 2024. That's a pretty hefty debt leverage ratio. I looked in the S&P Global Ratings on the debt. They have a B rating, so it's the second highest non-investment grade rating. It translates into they have the capacity to meet financial commitments, but they are very sensitive to adverse economic conditions if they should change. So you have a Carnival here, if you're a shareholder, where they're there, they're still alive, but its situation is quite fragile, and it's really one of those things. Carnival's management will really have to hope for we're not rolling over into a recession, because that would just could potentially set in motion some dynamics that could end in a very bad way. Then Tuesday, Walgreens Boots Alliance. It's very much a pharmacy drugstore chain, if you will. They also sell all other things that are not prescription drugs, etc. So it's a pretty broad-based retailer there in that part of the economy. We have Micron Technologies, super, super important company on Wednesday. Their memory chips goes into everything in terms of consumer electronics, which has been very weak spot in the economy. So I'm really, really looking forward to this report on Wednesday. They will report after the close. And then we have H&M and Nike, two consumer retailers, reporting on Thursday. H&M before the market opens in Europe, very much focused on them. And then Nike, of course, doing relatively better than Adidas, and have been doing extremely well, actually. So again, can they post a very strong outlook? I think that would be another sign that, you know, the US consumer is holding on to a positive outlook on the economy despite inflation, et cetera, et cetera.
Okay, and then on the macro calendar, we have the IFO out today, this morning. Actually, it's already out. I haven't even seen it because we started recording as it was being released. Another regional manufacturing activity survey, a two-year treasury auction, five-year tomorrow, seven-year on Wednesday. And this Centric Conference, the ECB hosts this. There are speakers from a number of the global major central banks, but we're just not looking for signals from central banks right now. So I'm not so sure we'll get much from it. I'd be willing to be surprised. More interesting, perhaps, are things like the new home sales. Again, the boom there is partially explained by people not wanting to move out of their existing homes because they're very satisfied with paying mortgages that they issued back in the pandemic era lows. And it's just so much more expensive to buy anything approaching the same value house because they would have to service it at a 7% mortgage rather than a 3 to 3.5% mortgage. June consumer confidence out of the U.S. And then to the end of the week, we get these latest inflation data points. And I think the reaction-wise, the most interesting one is going to be, of course, the May PCE inflation data point, the core month-on-month there. Are we continuing to see that sticky level, sort of 4.5-plus area that has just been sort of maintained for quite a few months now? And that'll be the key sort of data point-wise, the key event of the week on this macro calendar. All right, that is a wrap for today. Let's see if market action picks up, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.